Welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, bringing the tales and stories of the ancient Celts to your fireside. Episode 35 of Kings, Friends and Magic Pigs. Hello, welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show. I'm Ruth.
And I'm Gary, apparently. If you'd like to send us a message or some feedback, drop us a line at garyandruth@celticmythpodshow.com. Or have a look at all the things we've got available for you on our website at celticmythpodshow.com.
Oh, and make sure you check out the show notes at shownotes.celticmythpodshow.com. They'll tell you more about the story you're listening to, such as what our sources are, as well as a list of the characters' names so you can see how the strange-sounding names look written down.
So, have we got any news and views?
Yes, I thought it was worth mentioning that this show is kind of special.
How's that?
Well, the first branch of the Mabinogion, the story of Puig that we've been going through, is almost two stories in one. There's almost one story followed by another story.
Yes, that's true, actually, isn't it?
And this show, believe it or not, is the end of the first story.
Really?
So, get ready, guys.
Absolutely.
This is it, the climax, and then we're on to a new story.
We are. Excellent. And one of my favourites, a new one.
Ah.
Yes, and in this upcoming story, there's all sorts of supernatural happenings as well, isn't there? And talking of supernatural things, we actually made it to the fairy festival.
We did. Mm-hmm. Yes, my first time camping since I was a kid. My God, what an experience.
It was certainly an experience.
Yeah, we'll tell you about that later on. Yeah,
it was a bit wet, to say the least. However, a very good time was had by all, including our little granddaughter Amelia, who was just in her element. Oh, absolutely loved it.
She loved it, didn't she?
However, in the future, we will be bringing you a show based around that fairy festival and playing you music from some of the bands that were there and maybe talking a little bit about the stalls and the whole festival itself.
And the whole experience, yeah. I can't wait for it. It's going to be a good show.
Yeah. Now, I need to know something.
What's that?
Is it time for the story?
You betcha.
So remind us of what happened last time.
Okay. In our last episode, the man wearing the shape of a Raun had met the fiery king known as Havgal at the ford between the worlds. There they had battled in a swift, brutal and decisive battle. Havgal had begged Raun to put mercy into his sword arm, but the man wearing the shape of a Raun had refused, and the Summer King's druids had given Havgan his honour death. With heavy heart, Puig had headed back to the castle of Araun. The march back to Caer Araun was a long and tiresome ride. All of the warriors that accompanied him were joyous in a round of victory, and yet eager for the action that they had missed. Nobles and law speakers that were new to Puig would ride up beside him for a while, the horses' hooves crunching lightly on the crisp grass being counterparts of the heavy tread of storm. Each had a question about the new domain. At the time they stopped for rest, Puig was quick to throw himself into the furs that Berwyn had spread out for him inside his pavilion. The black and silver of Araun's shield was a warning for all to tread quietly past the bodyguard standing just outside the entrance. Berwyn watched his lord carefully, the lines of worry thickening on the old man's face as Puig threw himself restlessly around on the cot. The old man wondered what dreams troubled the grey lord this night. Little did he suspect that Puig was experiencing dreams that few mortals had ever experienced. Eons of memories, half-surfaced, with more recent images of the battle, where the god whose blood had turned a river red, mixed in equal proportion with the flowing tears of a beautiful queen whose heart had been broken. She cried tears of blood for her lost love, and Pwyll could feel his heart torn asunder, just as Halfgan's body had been broken by the thrust of his spear. He woke in the dawn's wan early light, the afterimage of the queen's eyes carrying an unspoken reprimand as he sat, shaking the last vestiges of sleep from his aching body. Berwyn creaked from his own furs and prepared to rouse his lord, a page dressing him for travel. He went to where Storm had been stabled and rubbed the stallion down, feeding him fresh hay as he did so.
"Only 2 short journeys more, my old friend, and then we must part ways,"
he said to the horse, who seemed to understand every word. At least, he pushed his nose up against Pwych's shoulder to make sure that the brushing continued. When finished, Pwych patted him fondly and went to join his retinue that had been rousing the camp.
"The sun has nearly risen, my friends, and this short ride shall bring us home. Home in time for breakfast, I think."
"Well, there's good news indeed, my lord."
"I'm thinking that a hunt would be a good way to celebrate our return before the feasting starts. What say you, my lords?"
"Each to his own, my lord. The winter spreads thin fingers over the icy water, and I shall bid you a joyous hunt."
"I was hoping for a warm bed, and an even warmer maiden."
"Hush, Yorlin. A noble hunt would start our celebrations off well, and it would give the castle good time to prepare for the biggest feast we've seen for a long time."
"Well said, Rhys. Let's get going."
So they rode then, and reached the ancient fortress, as the hubbub of activity within its walls was just beginning to reach normal levels. Pwych led Storm to the stables, thinking to grab a quick bite to eat before he went in search of the queen. Somehow, he, Pwych, Prince of Dyved, had to say a farewell to this marvellous woman, at the same time as Arawn had to greet her and tell her of his victory. He walked around the ancient halls until the stables were opposite him, and he saw the queen and her ladies were heading for them also, stable hands scattering in all directions. Slowly, he led Storm unseen towards her, watching her walk into the stables with obvious joy. She patted the nose of each horse as she walked the length of the building, their coats, dun and black and bay, glowing brightly as she blessed each with a gentle touch. Pwych entered the stable just as she reached her own grey, whose deep, almost crimson eyes shone deeply, and whose coat almost began to glow with the pure inner white light as she stroked him.
"My lady,"
Pwych began, leaving Storm in the hands of the one page brave enough to stand by the stable doors. And then he walked slowly towards the queen. She gently dropped her head forward slightly, golden braids settling like a silken collar onto her shoulders. She turned and slowly looked up into his eyes, searching his face for something.
"The day is ours, my lady, and there is but one kingdom in Annwn now."
"And what follows that, my lord?"
"Well, our reign is uncontested, my lady, so it is right that we should celebrate. I thought a hunt in your honour before the evening's feast."
"You will be away from the castle today then, my lord?"
"Although it pains my heart to leave you already, it is meet that the nobles hunt for the favour of their ladies this night."
"It has ever been so, my lord. I trust you will bring back a mighty prize for me this night."
"That I shall, for you are the fairest of all ladies, and the most deserving of such a prize."
"So it is to be a farewell until later then, my prince."
Bowing deeply to her, and noticing the subtle changes in her voice, Pwych turned back towards Storm, his thoughts filled with the coming meeting with the Dread Lord himself. He had acquitted himself honourably, but there were still many unanswered questions flying through Pwych's mind. Questions that the Grey Lord may ask him, and that he would find extremely hard to answer. He slowly rode to join his proud companions who had gathered at the edge of the woods, his excitement rising at the sight of the Cún Annwn, the Hounds of Annwn, those mighty hunting dogs that had been his first encounter with this enchanted realm so very long ago. They quieted as he approached, and the handlers began to trot alongside of the horses as they entered the woodland, the crisp snow on the branches turning to melt, and then to budded new growth before the mists began to rise. He allowed the companions to spread wide until the mists completely obscured him from the body of the hunt. It was only then that he leant into Storm's neck and whispered into his ear,
"It's time to find your master, noble friend. Lead us now. Take us to where Arawn awaits."
And at that, Storm picked up the pace, heading into thicker fog, where strange shapes were writhing about him. Shapes with faces and forgotten dreams of his previous nightmare ride flashed back into Quick's mind. These dark shapes were becoming more and more solid as they took half-seen forms behind him. This mighty force was gathering strength and rushing between the worlds as Storm plunged headfirst into the maelstrom of fog and flashing trees. This time, Quick felt no fear, for somehow he knew that the host behind him were his to command, that their purpose was somehow linked to the very existence of Arawn, a part of his memories that had never fitted into Quick's brain. The fog slowly became a mist, and Storm slowed to a gentle trot just as Quick began to discern an end to the trees that they had been riding through, and he realized that his ride must be nearly over. He broke through the tree line on Storm's back, sitting proud in the saddle as he saw himself, no, Arawn, on his own favourite mare, waiting at the centre of the clearing. He scanned Arawn's face for any sign of displeasure, and could feel the smile slowly spreading across his own features long before he saw the broad smile on Arawn's face. They both dismounted and clasped each other warmly before stepping back and smiling at each other. Arawn was the first to speak.
"Glad it is I am to see you, my friend, and may the gods repay you for your true friendship. A little bird has already told me about what you have done."
"When you return to your own country, you'll see what I have done for you."
"What you have done for me has earned my lasting friendship, and may all the gods repay you for it."
Warm was their meeting as they shared a horn of mead together. Arawn would not let Quick tell him more of their time apart, but restored to Quick his own shape and his own features, saying that he must return to Annoon for the celebrations. The magic of the transformation left Quick breathless, but he heard Arawn promising to meet him here in the glen at the time of the next dark moon, for he had gifts that he wished to bring to Quick, and that they could talk of their time in each other's worlds. Quick promised to bring gifts of his own, and watched in amazement as the Grey Lord mounted Storm, raised his hand in farewell, and disappeared into the darkling woods. Stunned, he sat there, realizing he had a friend never to be forgotten. At Caer Arawn, Eolin had presented his fair maiden with a boar that he had caught, and the feast had been long and riotous, with all celebrating long into the night. Arawn turned to his queen, who sat with eyes downcast, and said,
"I see that it is another that brings joy to his lady this evening, my queen. Surely without victories, can I not bring you joy in other ways?"
"Oh, that is so true, my husband. And there are yet more ways in which you could bring me joy this eve."
"Indeed there are, m'lady."
He turned his goblet over rapidly, causing the whole hall to become silent. And then he stood, holding out his hand to her.
"It has been a long day, and I confess that I am tired. I am forgetting that you and your ladies must be passing fatigued. Perhaps we should retire for the night."
"Perhaps we should, my lord."
She stood as her maidens helped her from the throne that she graced, and a small shower of silver leaves fell about her, as the birds in the branches above followed her towards the lady gate that she used to enter the hall. Arawn noticed that Elaine, the queen's fey handmaiden, looked back at him as they left, and he couldn't be sure, but for a while it did seem as though she had winked at him. Arawn sat for a brief while in front of the huge fire in his chambers, with Berwyn watching over him like an anxious mother hen. He'd not seen his lord this animated, or almost nervous, for many a year. It was almost as if Arawn was waiting for something. The pages had helped him into his night clothes, brought him fresh water to wash with, and then taking his huge fur cloak, he'd sat on the bed, sat by the fire, and eventually started pacing the main room. After what seemed to him like a seemly period of time, Arawn sent his knights and equerries, except Rhys, away, leaving just Berwyn, a few pages, and the minstrels who played gently at the far end of the room. Arawn asked them for a tune that Berwyn knew was one of the Queen's favourites. Beckoning Berwyn to his side, he then asked him to send one of the knights outside the door to venture to the lady's chamber and ask her for the pleasure of her company this night. Only a brief moment of hesitation showed Berwyn's surprise, but he opened the door, found Rhys amongst the warriors outside, and passed him the message. For Arawn, the minutes flew by like swallows, and the seconds chased them faster than the eye could see. He was beginning to feel as if an hour was gathering on the horizon, ready to begin its charge. Perhaps he'd have to make the journey across the castle himself. A gentle knock at the chamber door disturbed his reverie, and Berwyn opened the door to admit the Queen. Arawn rose to greet her, leading her to the warm, padded seat by the fire, and waiting for her ladies to take their places in one of the side chambers. She took a small cup of proffered mead and spoke lightly with Arawn of the day, until he stood and offered her his hand, leading them both to the bed. Her mind was a whirl, not understanding why his courtship tonight should be so different. Many, many seasons had passed since her husband had called her to his chamber.
Why has he sent for me? Why is his mood so different tonight from what it has been this past year?
She lay down on the thick furs, and Arawn lay next to her, pulling a huge soft fleece up over her. He propped himself up on one elbow, gazing deeply into her fathomless eyes. Still she lay there, next to her husband, in deep deliberation, with furrowing brow, until the up-till-then silent Arawn, moving closer, gently stroked her cheek and said,
"Why won't you talk to me, my love?"
And Arawn asked her the same question a total of 3 times before she suddenly answered him,
"I tell you true, husband, that I have not spoken as much as these very words for a whole year upon either this or my own bed."
"How can that be? We have always, talked together."
"During the past year, whilst we were under my bedding furs, there has been neither conversation, comfort, or any pleasure. You didn't even turn your face to me, let alone anything else."
Arawn suddenly realised exactly how true a friend Pwyll had been to him. And he smiled to himself. This mortal had passed all the tests that this path had thrown in front of them both, stayed true to his course despite the vast pressures he must have been under, and gained the true friendship of the Grey Lord, Death himself. That was a debt that Arawn meant to pay in full. But now it was time for him to return the love and trust of his lady.
"Lady, do not blame me. Between me and the Most High, I have neither slept nor lain down with you this past year."
Quickly and quietly then, he told her the whole story.
"You must have struck a firm bargain for your young friend to have fought off the temptations of the flesh and kept his word to you."
"Lady, those were my very thoughts whilst I was silent just now. And such bounteous temptations they are too. Perhaps I can strike a firm bargain with you."
She laughed then and drew him to her. It was only much later, as they lay curled in each other's arms, that just for a moment, had Arawn looked into her eyes, he would have seen a slow burning, simmering anger that she bore. Oh yes, Pwyll had been an attractive young man for a mortal, but her husband had made her into his accomplice, and soon there would have to be a reckoning before the balance was restored, that she knew. In the meantime, though, her husband was back with her, and the joy of that knowledge outshone the anger in her eyes, and she passed into sleep with him, walking hand in hand with him amongst worlds that only the gods know. Pwyll rode out of the trees and started following the River Kych until it joined the sparkling Davy. There he picked up speed a little, waving at the farmers toiling in their sun-baked fields as he headed towards the settlement at the mighty sandbank-filled estuary. The estuary where boats from many strange lands came to ply their trade, bringing spices, fine cloths, and the face colourings that the women of the tribes loved so much. Here he knew that he would find his court, and he headed for the waterside castle. Its great wooden beams a comforting and familiar sight to the man who had walked between the worlds. His retainers helped him dismount and took the steaming mare from him. His true companions were beginning to assemble in the courtyard and seeing him strode over to join him. He clasped each to his breast in turn, amongst a few surprised yet pleased faces, and then led them all into the great hall, where he took his place and waited for the other nobles and the druids to gather. When all were settled and waiting for him to speak, he addressed the chief druid, asking her to step forth.
"Noble elder, tell me, what has been the nature of my rule over the Kamadai during the previous year? How have my lands prospered under my reign?"
"My lord?"
"Compared to previous years, tell me, how have I ruled over the year just gone?"
She glanced around at the others of her order, and at the knights around her, wondering whether this was some political manoeuvring that the young prince was attempting. Puig saw her hesitate and said,
"Hold nothing back and tell me true. That is my wish."
"Well, my lord, it has been said that you have never been so perceptive in your rule. Never have you been so generous in your gift-giving, been so ready to share your wealth as you have been in the last year. It's true as well that in matters of judgment, never have you shown such discernment, such wisdom, and such justice. I'm sure we all thank you for that rule."
"Thank you for your honesty and trust, revered elder. But I must now tell you that it is right you ought to thank the man who was with you rather than myself."
There was much confusion and chatter then, and Puig held his hands in the air and waited for it to quieten down. When it had, he told them all the whole story. Delwyn, his closest companion, came to his side.
"Well, lord, thank the gods that you made such a friend of him that you met."
"Tell me, lord, as for the rule we've known this past year, surely you will not take it from us?"
Puig stood then, imposing before the crowd filling the hall.
"Before all the gods, that I will not."
From that time on, the friendship between Puig and Arawn increased, and it seemed that Dovid became a land of eternal sunshine. They would meet at the time of the dark of the moon and talk far into the night, exchanging gifts. Gifts of horses, hunting dogs, and whatever treasures each thought his friend might like. At one time, Arawn brought some magic boars with him. Boars that were not savage and wild and would live happily with men and more easily trained than dogs. He told Puig that these magic boars, or pigs, had meat so tender that it would remind him always of the halls of Anun. So Puig took his magic pigs back with him and began to breed them, until other eyes became envious of such magic. But that is another story. Because Puig had spent a whole year and a day in the other world and ruled there so successfully, because he had united the two realms by virtue of his valour and his skill, the name Puig, Prince of Dovid, fell into disuse, and he became known as Puig Penanun. Puig, the Lord of Anun, from that day on. In our next episode, Puig decides to risk a beating in search of a wonder.
That was really good. And it finishes off the first part of Puig's story, doesn't it?
It does, that's right. There are two distinct storylines in the first branch of the Mabinogion, and we'll start on the second part of the Puig story in the next story show.
I like this one.
It's good.
So have you got a promo for us?
No, but there is something I'd like to share.
Uh-oh, he's going to do his dancing, singing bit. Duck.
No, I won't.
Okay, what is it then?
Well, I find it fascinating that the story of Puig is at least 700 years old in written form and probably a lot older in oral form, and it's a great hero story.
Yes.
Well, isn't it incredible that we all still need to hear these stories today? I mean, it's not just in films and books, but also in things like computer games that the story of the hero is played out again and again.
Uh-huh, that's true. And now I know where this is going.
Well, you know that we both spend a couple of hours in the evening playing the computer game Skyrim when we get a chance.
Yes, and for those of you who haven't got a clue what he's talking about, it's a computer game world where you take on the role of a legendary hero and go off killing dragons and quests and so on.
That's right, that's right. And I was thinking that even on such a small scale, doesn't it just show how much we need the mythic and the heroic in our everyday lives?
That's very true. It's very, very popular, like things World of Warcraft, etc. That's probably for the same reason.
Yeah.
A little while ago, we found a beautiful and haunting rendition of one of the bard songs from Skyrim, and it's sung by a young Mexican girl known as Maluka.
Yes. Let's have a listen to The Dragonborn Comes by Maluka.
Our hero claims a warrior's heart. I tell you, the dragonborn comes with a voice wielding power of the ancient Lord Art. Believe, believe, the dragonborn comes. It's an end to the evil of all Skyrim's foes. Has passed and the legend yet grows. You'll know the dragonborn's come. Ah-ha.
Such an amazingly beautiful voice. I think she's got a great future ahead of her.
I think you're right. You'll find more links to Maluka, her other game songs and the YouTube video that went viral and started it all in our show notes.
And that song, I promise you, will be going round and round in your head for the next 3 weeks.
It did mine.
And mine. Okay, have we got anything else?
No, I think that's all we've got time for.
In that case, I'd just like to mention that if you've got an iPhone, iPad or Android phone, then you can get hold of our app, which has all the shows and occasionally some extra stories, poetry and artwork for you to enjoy. You'll find the links on the front page of our website at CelticMythPodShow.com.
It's true.
And if you'd like to help us keep the show going by donating a small amount, no matter how small, every little helps. And you can find the donation button on the front page too.
And we'd be grateful for absolutely anything you can spare. Thank you so much. With that, I think we'd like to wish you all many blessings and say,
Húldar.
You've been listening to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, available from CelticMythPodShow.com.
We hope you've enjoyed the show and will stay tuned for the next episode. You can send us an email or some voice feedback to Gary and Ruth at CelticMythPodShow.com. We'd like to say a special thank you to Coulan's Hounds, who provided us with the theme music for our show. You can find them at www.sfhounds.com.
We'd also like to say a massive thank you to Amrus, Kira, Celia, Dave the Bard, The Dolman, Keltoria, Kevin Skinner, Phil Thornton, SJ Tucker, and Spiral Dance. All of these wonderful friends have given us unrestricted access to their music. More details about each of them can be found in the special Friends of the Show page on our website.
You'll find links to all of these wonderful artists in the show notes at shownotes.celticmythpodshow.com. www.celticmythpodshow.com.